revolution and war in the world? The whole system is wretchedly wrong. And by promoting it and expanding it, we've embarked on a crusade that is unworthy of us as a people. I think our leaders need to be replaced. I think the foreign policy team that we currently have in Washington, the best thing that could happen to them would be retirement.
In the Vietnam era, you know, there was so much protest that eventually it did get to Congress and they did cut off the funding.
This is true, but as those four historians I mentioned at the very outset of our discussion today, even though they were very different in their reaction to American foreign policy, they all agreed that the Vietnam War was a catastrophe. And it was Arthur Meyer Schlesinger who actually said the words I'm about to repeat. The war in Vietnam has been a horrible and expensive education. We must have no more Vietnams. Oh, we've been having nothing but more Vietnams ever since. I get as excited as any American about presidential politics. But, you know, you really have to get discouraged when you think about how little difference it makes in our foreign policy, whether a Democrat or a Republican gets in, because the foreign policies stay the same. They don't change. The heart of the matter, I think, is on the negative side. The course of empire in American history is our great crisis, and we need to confront it. We need to understand it. That's what the 1,000 military bases worldwide are for. They're there to protect the empire. And we have to ask ourselves, is this the right investment we should be making? Is the military-industrial complex the right defining institution for America, which it has become? My argument would be no. Our greatest historian said, no, the course of American empire will lead us to the same destination that every single empire in recorded history has arrived at, and that's defeat, destruction, and disappearance.
That was University of Montana professor Richard Drake speaking with KABU contributor David Rosenberg about what the testimony of four American historians back in 1971 can tell us about U.S. foreign policy and Russia's reaction today. You've been listening to KABU News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Thanks for being with us.
You're tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kabu.fm.
You're listening to KBOO Community Radio, and we're nearing the end of our All Thrills, No Frills special programming campaign. We only have a few days left to meet our $22,000 goal, and you can do your part by going to kboo.fm/give to make a contribution today. KBOO's special programming is only possible with your support. To listen to all of our thrilling specials from this drive, go to kboo.fm/thrills.
What is climate change? How is it affecting our lives? And what can we do about it? We'll connect the dots from energy to extreme weather, public health, and more. I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerowitz. Join me for Climate Connections during the evening news, weekdays at 5 p.m. here on 90.7 KBOO Portland.
The following program is a rebroadcast. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred. Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Portland.
There you go.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel.
Hey, Stephen.
We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers, and we host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us on the Zoom from Chicago area is Rahaf Oakman. Welcome, Rahaf.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me today.
Yeah, well, Rahaf, we always like to start by just getting to know some of the sort of the basics about who our guests are. So if you would tell us about your teaching background and your experience.
Sure. I've been teaching for 24 years. For the last 16 of them, I've been in a high school in the south suburbs of Chicago, where I teach social studies, mostly juniors and seniors. I don't know what else to I'm very involved in the school. I also am the Unity Club sponsor. That's our diversity club, our international club. Because we are one of the most diverse schools in the Chicagoland area, we have almost every background possible within our school. So it's really cool to have, and it's really cool to work with.
Great. And what inspired you to become a teacher?
I have a love for history that started probably around middle school. And I'll be honest with you, when I was in elementary school, I wasn't very good at it. I think I actually got an F in fourth grade in social studies. And I grew to really appreciate it and enjoy it in middle school. And that's when I decided I wanted to be a social studies teacher.
Okay. So middle school. All right. And how about now? What do you enjoy most about teaching now?
The students, definitely the students, the building the relationships with the students, the long-term relationships. They are the most enjoyable part of teaching every single day.
Yes. We love our students. Mm-hmm. And what about union roles or positions? Do you have any sort of official union role or position?
Yes, I'm actually our local secretary, which means I'm also on the executive committee. I am also the co-chair of our local's equity committee. My co-chair is Gladys Marquez, if you've ever heard of her, yes. And at the region level, I am a representative, and I'm also on our state's human and civil rights committee. And then in addition to that, I am also a member of the NEA Leaders for Just Schools program. I've been helping facilitate that program at our state level for the last year. And I'm going to also be helping at the national level starting at the end of the summer. And I'm also a part of the NEA Leaders of Color program.
Wow. Okay. So you got a few things going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just a few.
Yes. So we wanted to have you on our show to talk about your experience at the annual NEA Representative Assembly, which just ended recently. So for those listeners that aren't familiar, the National Education Association, or we usually just call it the NEA, is the largest union in the country, representing about 3 million teachers and other educators. And you brought a proposal that you were hoping to get passed that we want to talk about.
So my first question, which I think I know the answer to, is, was this your first NEA Rep Assembly?
No, it was not. It was not. I've spoken to other NBIs, but in the past, but this is, so I'm a veteran. I've been doing this for a while.
Okay. So for our listeners, the NEA Rep Assembly is where 5,000 to 10,000 educators from around the country are elected to come and participate in 4 days of listening, speaking, debating, and voting on various bylaws, policies, resolutions, new business items. And the new business items are the most common proposals asking NEA to do something, usually something that costs some money. So can you tell us about the new business item you are proposing? I can read it, or would you like to read it?
No, you can read it.
Okay, so it reads, NEA will, one, use existing digital communication tools to educate members and the general public about the history, culture, and struggles of Palestinians, including the detention and abuse of children in the occupied Palestinian territory. Two, use existing digital communication to publish an article in the NEA Today, recognizing the work done by our members fighting for the rights of Palestinian children and families. Three, publicly advocate for Palestinian children to have access to a quality education while supporting their right to a safe and just future in accordance with the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child and other international standards. Four, highlight the need for state and local affiliates to honor and protect the rights of members advocating for Palestinian human rights. So can you tell us about this proposal? Was it a collaboration? Did you write it alone? And what were you hoping to accomplish?
Actually, it was a collaboration. We wrote this NBI with Sobia Sheikh from Washington State and Erica Chavarria from Maryland, and I got together and decided that we wanted to write this proposal. And we actually, this started 2 years ago from the 2019 Representative Assembly. At the time, there was another NBI about Palestine, which I had spoken to. And then we met afterwards and decided to collaborate and see what we wanted to do in the future. It was definitely a team effort.
I have some memory of that. I was there at that RA, and I remember there being some debate, but I don't remember the specifics of that NBI. So yeah, and good to know that Erica was one of your co-conspirators there. I've met her and appreciate her work.
She's fierce and we love her.
So spoiler alert, we never did get to debate your NBI. We ran out of time, and we can only speculate as to how much of that was intentional or not. If you want to speak to that, you can. But what kind of pushback did you receive for submitting your NBI for consideration? I'm particularly curious about pushback you got from other delegates or union leadership, or really just any kind of pushback that you got.
There was pushback, and I was actually taken aback with how much pushback, because my name was on the NBI as the maker. But if I can backtrack a little bit, the purpose of the NBI was basically, it was to look out for our Palestinian students that we have in our classrooms all across the United States. I am a Palestinian refugee. I was born in Palestine. I came to the United States as a refugee. And I remember the struggles that I faced in the classroom. And one example that I gave when I spoke to our state steering committee and our state caucus was, when I was in grade school, one of my teachers had given us an assignment to write about or to present about anywhere in the world. And I proudly chose Palestine because that's where I was born. And that teacher turned to me and said, "Palestine doesn't exist, honey. You need to choose something else."
Wow.
But I was born there. And so that was telling me that I did not exist. And it continues to affect me till this day. She wasn't a bad teacher. She just wasn't aware. And so the goal with this NBI is to bring that awareness, because a lot of our Palestinian students across the United States continue to struggle with that. There are numerous accounts just last year alone where similar comments were made by teachers to their students. And, you know, if there was that awareness of Palestinian history and culture, then we can teach to the whole child. Because if teachers don't believe Palestine exists, then we're doing a disservice to those students that are in our classrooms.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, so your NBI was really focused on a big part of it, at least, was focused on informing our educators so that they could then pass that on to their students.
Yeah, so the students would feel seen and heard and recognized. And then that last point was, because of the pushback that we always get when we speak up about Palestine, which was your last question. As I said, I was totally taken aback by it. I was spammed with emails in opposition. I was attacked. I faced death threats. And I think the entire purpose of all of that was intimidation, to back down and to withdraw. All of the NEA directors across the country, all of the executive members, board of directors, the state executive members, all were spam emailed. And we found out later that those emails were coming from a bot outside of the United States. It was not even from here. And the majority of them to the leadership committees were the same exact email, just sent from different addresses. In addition, I got some pushback from our association, which was completely surprising to me. I found out there was a lot of work being done behind the scenes to shut down the NBI. And intimidation tactics were used with me up front. I was called a day before I was to present it in front of my own state and steering committee. And I was told that some very influential people would be speaking up in opposition. And when I wanted to have a conversation about that, the response I received was, we're not talking about this. We just don't want you to be blindsided when this happens, because it will happen. So it was that was very frustrating because, and my response to them was, we advocate for all students. We fight for all the marginalized. We believe in equity. And the feeling I'm getting from, you know, that conversation was that we will fight for everyone except our Palestinian students. And that's not acceptable.
Mm-hmm. You mean Palestinian lives matter?
Who would have thought? And as I was talking to someone else, I did share that. And it's not, we don't want to take away from Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter is very important. So I don't want to walk around saying Palestinian lives matter, because it's not right to do that. But while I was sharing an example with someone, I did say that conversation I had with the person that called me was equivalent to that. It was like we were saying, you know, Palestinian lives matter, and the response was all lives matter. And we know how that goes, and we know why that's said. So it was very disheartening to get that from my own leadership that I always thought was everything they did was with the best intentions for our students.
Right. And what sort of effect did all that pushback have on you?
I'll be honest with you. I cried. I ugly cried several times. And then I'd wipe my tears, and it would actually motivate me to push harder. Because if this is the pushback that I'm getting here in the United States with the freedoms that I have to be able to speak on this, imagine the struggles that the Palestinians face back home. Imagine the pushback that they get where they're not allowed to speak on it, or they're not allowed to have the freedoms that we have here. And so that their intentions to intimidate me and make me go away, if anything, had the opposite effect. And we're not going away. We will continue to fight this fight.
Right. Great. And it seems like the pushback against people who are trying to speak up for the rights of Palestinian children and families and just the people, there's a greater pushback, right? This is a common response. Articles being retracted out of journals that are factually correct just because they get pushback.
Yeah, and that's the intention, is to intimidate people not to speak up. There was a doctor that lost her job because she spoke in support of Palestine. Erica, who we've talked about, had previous NBIs on Palestine, and when she received death threats and spoke up to it to the NEA, the response she got was, "Then stop making NBIs about Palestine." So it's not let's address the issues or let's address the death threats. It's, well, if you stop doing this, then that won't happen. And my question to that is, why are people pushing so hard to silence us? What are they afraid of? What information could possibly come out that has these people in so much fear that they are using every tactic possible to try to silence anyone that speaks up about Palestine? I mean, that's something that really needs to be considered here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have a hypothesis on what they're afraid of?
If the truth was to truly come out and there would be genuine awareness of what happens in that area, I think there would be a lot of loss of support. And I think that's the fear. The unconditional, unwavering support would shift. And so they will not allow that to happen. And if you take a look at it, like RNBI does not talk about anyone else besides Palestinian children, but yet it was deemed as anti-Semitic and divisive by many. And so how could it be anti-Semitic when it's not knocking anyone? We want to do what's best for kids because we're educators. That's what we do. But the immediate response is to call it anti-Semitic, even when it's not. And that's not intentionally, because as soon as the word anti-Semitic is out, people immediately shut down and stop talking about it because they don't want to be seen as racist, and it makes them uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And so they, you know, that word is used, and there are situations that really are anti-Semitic, and I'm not denying that by any means. But sometimes that word is overused to get that reaction, to have people to stop talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I was thinking too that there's a lot of fear because, just like you brought up, the doctor who is fired. People lose their careers for speaking in support of Palestinian rights and freedom. And
yes, I actually had that in September. I tweeted something about Palestine, and somebody got a hold of it, and they were they reached out to my school and they started tagging my school on Twitter, and they got all these other people. And it was just like, I felt like I was drowning in tweets that were attacking me and tagging my school, and they were calling my school. And their ultimate goal was to get me fired at that point because I dared speak up in support of Palestine.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, I'm hoping you also had some positive response and support. Talk about that, and also curious about what comes next for your NBI.
I was actually overwhelmed by the positive support. I've met so many new people with the CNA virtually that reached out because they were supportive and wanted to see how they wanted to help. I was also overwhelmed with the support and within my own state. As I said, I was told that people would publicly oppose, go to the mic and oppose the NBI. And when I spoke before the steering committee, the end vote was unanimous in support of the NBI, which was not what they were planning. People came in there ready to oppose, and by the time we were done talking about it, we got full support. And then when we took it to the state level, the state caucus voted in support by 87%, something that had never happened before. We did get the state to support the Palestinian NBI in 2019, but it was by a very small margin. So I was awestruck by how much love and support I did get from all around the country, and most especially within my own state and my own people. It was a wonderful feeling, and that's what gives me hope that we're going to get this done. And moving forward, we are going to get this done. I it's gone to executive committee. Who knows what's going to happen with executive committee? Sometimes they get lost in the mix and nothing happens, and sometimes, you know, something does. It's out of our control now. But we already have plans to move forward with some more NBIs in the future. So we're going to continue to push to do the work at the state level and speak with people at the national level. So we're not going away, and we're going to keep pushing for this very important cause.
Speaking of other NBIs, there was another NBI pertaining to Palestine and the Palestinian people that did make it to debate and a vote. Do you have any comments about that NBI? What were your thoughts about it? And also what were your thoughts about how things went down as far as the debate and the vote?
Well, I reached out to the maker of that NBI, and I found out that we had two totally different goals. But our purpose with our NBI was to do what's best for students. And we didn't want to rile people up. We weren't trying to make waves. We just wanted to advocate for our students in the best way that we could. I, to some degree, that MBI accomplished some of the goals that it had. It was defeated, but it did bring awareness. It did bring a lot of people that were that spoke up strongly, either for or against. And I understand that was the intention of that. So, they're two totally different MBIs with two different purposes.
Yeah.
So what do you see as next steps in terms of expanding education about Palestinian history and struggles in occupied Palestinian territories? How would you like to see this conversation and advocacy grow among NEA members?
Well, I think the conversation and the advocacy definitely needs to grow. And one of the reasons why it is where it's at is because of that lack of awareness. And so I plan to continue to work with my state and NEA directors across the country to see what we can do to bring more awareness. The problem is there's some pushback at the national level. There was some at the state level before we got support. So we're fully aware that it's going to be a struggle and it's going to be an uphill climb. But we are persistent and we are resilient, and we will make this happen. It will happen, even if we start off by doing like in-person trainings ourselves. But we start off small, and then we will continue to build on it until it's where we need it to be.
If you do in-person trainings, are you considering recording them and making them available to people outside of the state?
Absolutely. I don't see why not. The purpose is to bring awareness. So if that's going to bring awareness, then absolutely.
Yeah. That'd be great. So overall, how would you describe your NEA Rep Assembly experience, and how are you feeling now that it's over?
This NEA RA has been different than past ones in that I went through a roller coaster of emotions. Hello, baby. I went through a roller coaster of emotions. You know, I was ecstatic at times. I was just a ball of tears at other times. Just seeing the positives that came from it, the conversations that began from it, you know, I'm walking away feeling like this RA was very successful. Yes, we did not have our NBI go to the floor, but yet we were successful in that we want to bring awareness, and there was a lot of awareness that happened as a result. And as I said earlier, I was completely overwhelmed with how much support there was. That brought me to tears as well, especially when I knew how hard it was going to be, and I was told that it was going to be defeated no matter what. And we were able to get our state to vote for it overwhelmingly. I mean, that just, it gives me goosebumps still thinking about it. So I'm walking away with very positive feelings from this RA, and we're already planning on how we can move forward for the next one.
Great.
And what were some of the, some other NBIs that really excited you that came through this time?
The LGBTQ ones, because some of the comments that were made were concerning, and these are coming from educators, and they have those students in their classrooms. The one on CRT that was passed, NBIA, because I think it's going to accomplish a lot. I feel like the majority of the MBIs were advocating for our students, and as you know, many of them got passed. It was exciting to see the work that would be done and the advocacy that would be there for the students. But I, you know, one of my biggest struggles, well, I had bigger struggles with this RA, but as I was watching people speak, I was really concerned with some of the comments that were made with the LGBTQ NBI. So I'm very happy that all of them were passed, because it's clear that we have a lot of work to do there.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any last words or requests for our listeners?
For my final words, to those that have tried to silence us and make us go away, they did not accomplish their goal, and they will never accomplish their goal as long as we can, you know, we're here. As long as I'm alive, I will continue to push, because that's what we need to do. And to those that supported us, we thank you, we appreciate you, we value you. And we know it's hard, because you do get pushback when you speak up publicly. So thanks for helping us fight the good fight.
Oh, yeah. And I'm wondering, too, for educators who do want to learn more about Palestinian history and culture, do you have any recommendations in terms of books or films or things that you feel like give a good sort of, you know, base understanding of the history of Palestine?
Yeah, there's actually this really cool website that has an abundance of resources on it. It's PalestineAdvocacyProject.org. Again, PalestineAdvocacyProject.org. And so the purpose of that site is actually to bring awareness of the history and the culture of Palestine. So there's a lot of great information that you'll find there. There's a lot of resources. Sometimes you have to filter through them. But I definitely recommend taking a look at that one.
Great. We're about to end, but just on a personal note, I was fortunate to be able to visit my brother in Ramallah in 1998, and it really was a great awakening. I got to see with my own eyes the apartheid system and the kind of daily degradations that Palestinians had to go through just to move in the world and go to work and live their lives. So I'm so happy that this work is happening and moving forward, and I'm excited for next year's MBI to pass.
Me too, Rahafa. I really appreciate the work that you're doing and look forward to seeing more.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And if I can speak to that, actually, I did take my family back once and it traumatized my kids. I don't think I'd ever do that again. My 1.5-year-old at the time was surrounded by 5 soldiers with guns in his face. They surrounded him in a stroller and pointed their guns at him. He was 1.5, so I don't know how he was a threat. And so my older children saw that, and I can't do that to them again. And it hurts to know that other children deal with that on a daily basis.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Raha, for joining us on KBOO. Thank you to Jamie Partridge for helping us convert this to a radio-ready file. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen. This is Rachel Haynes. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. to catch another Labor Radio show.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.
I'm Doug McVeigh, host of Free Culture Radio. Every month, we bring you 30 minutes of news and information about people who use drugs as we discuss topics like safe supply, safe consumption spaces, decriminalization, legalization.